Because I noticed, like, it's like Phil retweeted Indie Comic Book Noises.
Well, yeah, because I was on there the other day looking for, because Ark, that game I play, that's the only way to find out the updates. And, yeah, and I noticed that was, so I clicked on that. I retweeted. I think that's a good thing.
It is. It is the best thing you can do,
Except I have, like, no followers. So I don't know if it does much.
But maybe it'll bump it into someone else's feed. A lot of people are retweeting this.
Yeah, you guys saw it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy.
I did get a good find this week, though, at a, like, an old, like, it's like a food store, but he had a Lebanese store, and he had, like, a small wall of comics and figures and stuff. So I got two mint copies in the package of the Twisted Land of Oz figures, which I've been after.
Mm.
And they were $20 each. And, like, on eBay, for example, like, you're paying over 100.
Wow, that is
figures.
Good.
So, yeah, so it was a pretty good crazy deal.
Look who's the toy guy now.
I know, hey, but I don't go crazy like you guys. I just get a couple. You know, kind of thing. Yeah, it was fun.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
All right, let me drop an intro on this thing, boys. I think we're ready.
You like that toy noise?
I don't know. Might not be able to use any of it.
Probably not.
Except for the part where I said I would burn the Valiant comics to keep warm.
I thought that was going to make it. I'm still waiting for that that Ninjak series. It looks like that's quality, creative.
Welcome back, folks, to Indie Comic Book Noise. We're having a relaxed, laid-back episode today.
We are.
It just features the three somewhat regular hosts. You just heard WWX Kev from the Icebox. Say hi, Kev.
Is this where I'm supposed to do my bit?
And from the nation's capital, strapped down, ready to take on all comers, from the Otter's Den, locked and loaded, it's the Ottawa Otter, Phil. Trying to beef up your intro, Phil.
Good day, everyone. You're doing a little better.
And me, Andrew the LA Rabbit, down here, stateside, making this podcast international.
Living the Hollywood life.
Wait, you're international?
Currently very warm. Well, because different members of the podcast are from different countries.
Well, maybe you're national in these unprecedented times.
Indie Comic Book Noise, part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Deliberate Noise Network? What's that, you say? Well, it's a entire host of shows covering all your needs. What do you mean, all your needs, you're saying? Well, all your needs, like you want to find out about cool TV shows, comic books, other things. You can sometimes hear Kevin and myself on the Disney-based podcast, Marvel Noise.
When are we covering the Mighty Ducks?
And Marvel Noise has a unique distinction of being family-friendly. Unlike this show where you heard the disclaimer at the beginning, that disclaimer, as I always disclaim, is just for the fact that Indie Comic Noise, being such a wide territory, can cover adult themes and concepts. But really, the three of us are very laid back and don't say anything controversial at all.
You know, sometimes, or KK, maybe not sometimes, quite often I disclaim your disclaimer about the disclaimer with, the most controversial thing we might say is I'd rather read a monthly comic than your OGN that's $33 as a hardcover that comes out every 4 to 6 months.
Or it gets very spicy when me or Steve talk about Savage Dragon.
Oh, that's true, too. I mean, you think a $33 hardcover would bring in enough cash.
That's pretty steep.
I know. Sometimes I just want to read the 22-page comic every month.
But you can find Indie Comic Book Noise old episodes on our website, IndieComicBookNoise.com, strangely enough. There you'll find show notes. Sometimes I try and put links in. Kevin usually erases them and puts rude stuff instead. But sometimes I can sneak it past him when he's not paying attention. So check out there. You can search. Listen to old. Sometimes we refer to stuff we've listened to before. You can even go back as far before any of us were even involved with the podcast.
Whoa.
Indie Comic Book Noise, as I hinted at, it's just like a free-flowing discussion about whatever things related to indie comic books we talk about. And indie comic books can be anything from Kevin's homemade comics to the
magazines, toys, to
the international best-selling Scholastic publications, from mega giant publishers to media tie-ins. I was going to mention a few pieces of news came across the wire.
Oh, nice.
We don't tend to be super topical because that puts me under pressure to edit these things and get them out. But every once in a while,
should put you under pressure.
that sounded ominous. We mentioned a few things. So I wanted to shout out that we mentioned the show before, but Invincible got renewed, the cartoon, for two more seasons.
That's right. And the last episode is today.
Did you watch it?
Not yet.
Okay.
But I'm going to.
I am two episodes into this opening season.
And what are you thinking with, you read the comic?
I read only the first trade. I kind of lost interest.
So you can enjoy this then.
You missed the big moment then.
Well, it's kind of in the cartoon. They lay it out pretty much. Also, I've read plenty of Kirkman comics, and that's not some kind of slam or anything. I enjoy them very much.
Yeah.
But I also imagine this is going to be not unlike his other comics.
Yeah.
So I enjoy that. I've thought, it's fun. They have so many different, famous voice actors in it. That's been
Jason Mantzoukas is my favorite in it. He plays Rexplode.
And I because right away it starts with, John Hamm. And you're like, is that John Hamm?
Who did he play?
He's the security guard with the stepson, and they're bonding. Okay. I don't know. I hope they have him in all the episodes, but so far it starts with him just having a real heart-to-heart moment. And it's fun. It didn't, I think it looks well. It didn't hook my wife, which is sad.
No. It's always good. I don't think, that's what I thought about it. It'd be hard to hook new people in, I think.
Yeah, because she really loved the boys a lot. So I was oh, it's another Amazon superhero thing. And she didn't hate it or anything, but it just didn't have that kind of instant appeal the way that did, but I'm liking it. It's fine. I think some of the high school stuff she was finding just kind of trouble with.
I have trouble with high school stuff these days too. It's just our age, I think,
But like I said, I think before, when I just seen clips, visually it looks good. I think it's a quality cartoon, quality voice actors. It's fun, but I don't feel the same. I feel like we're in a golden age of superhero TV and properties and movies and all that. So I don't slight anyone who's like, they're not. I'm going to finish it just because.
Yeah. I'm having fun with it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I would say read the comic. If you're only going to do one, the comic's so much better.
But if The Boys, the new season dropped, I would switch to that instantly. If you had to pick between The Boys and Invincible, I found
100%.
More entertaining a TV show.
And I'll always go live action over cartoon.
And then also related, they finally started releasing some trailers and teasers and everything for the Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That's all my things.
Unfortunately, that's not indie news.
Well, I have to bring it up, Phil, because it's it's Black Hammer tangential. And Kevin was waiting because it's a black. It's how he gets Black Hammer into the show, and we can't have an episode without Black Hammer.
I have all the Sweet Tooth trades signed by him with the sketch too. He did a different sketch in each one for me.
You know, sadly, I blew those issues out a few years ago. I could have been rich.
I was trying to think I think I don't have any of my issues. I have a few of the trades. My problem is I liked it, but I don't think I finished. I think I got about halfway through it and faded.
That's okay.
Same for me. I don't know. At some way through, like probably about halfway, I just kind of draw. Like I have them all, but I never finished it.
Yeah, same thing happened to me. Then there was a big Digi sale.
Yeah.
Like I don't know, a few years ago now. I think I covered it on probably on here, and then mm-hmm.
It's
read
one of those
like
stories that just went too long. I think. Maybe.
I don't think it was that interesting. Like it gets into a lot of.
It's exciting at first, but then really down.
I mean, it's just another like post-apocalyptic thing, and then and I think there's like a flashback issue, maybe by Kint or something that was cool, and then after that, I was just like,
I think it could make a cool show, though.
Yeah, there,
yeah. I would. The one thing is, if they change like the end or something, I would not be surprised.
Well, it was a good world he built. Like it was some. Like I think with Kevin. Might be on something, but I just kind of lost interest in it.
Yeah.
But also, that was early Lemire for me, so I was enjoying his artwork. You know, it was something. Mm-hmm. He was a new artist. I know he had that, his growing up book about, you know, playing hockey and growing up. And,
oh, I don't like that one.
That was his big first thing.
It's too Canadian for me.
he likes the rural country. Yeah. See, like in Black Hammer. In like his indie stuff, it's always like, oh, we're out in the country again, that type of thing. And Sweet Tooth is gonna be like a journey.
You know what? So. Just you guys talking about that hockey one, I just want to throw up my copy right now.
how un-Canadian of you?
Well, I'll never touch that thing again.
See, the thing I was looking for in that trailer was like the Hollywood things. I'm like, well, are they gonna like have these big fights? Or they're like going to go to these massive cities, like stuff that wasn't really.
In the trailer, did you guys notice his traveling companion? I didn't see him in the trailer. I forget his name, but the guy, you know, that kind of protects him at first.
Yeah, I was wondering how much they were keeping back.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think I saw like his character in the trailer at all.
Like I know I definitely saw the guy with the glasses and everything. Like.
Mm-hmm.
The guy you don't want to run across of.
And to let everybody know, it's the Essex County is the hockey book that we're
talking
about.
That's right, yeah.
That's the official name. I liked, like I wasn't, I've probably for me, the top stuff of his of that vein, I liked the Underwater Welder, I thought was pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
Ooh.
Oh. I know the Nobody didn't really move me either way, but that was another big one.
I think I like that one, Nobody.
The Nobody's better. I just feel like the Underwater Welder, it just went nowhere and did nothing.
I know, but I like that idea.
It was a mystery, and then it doesn't really, I don't know.
Because I've always been fascinated about that job.
I mean, the job is fine. Yeah, it's just the story. This doesn't,
so I'm like,
I don't know.
It seemed like a cool setting because I'm like, you know, I really like underwater welding. It always seemed kind of fascinating. Like,
yeah, me too.
In some ways it's mundane, but it seems super dangerous at the same way. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of relaxation.
And it is, I used to scuba dive a lot and it is so relaxing when you're underwater.
But,
like
you
that.
Know, like you can't mess up or you're in real. Huh. And that was that tension between that was probably what got me. And then I guess the last, cause I'm not a Black Hammer guy. So the last thing for me was probably the Trillium he worked on.
I was going to say that one. Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously he did a lot of DC and Marvel and that. And I like that stuff, but kind of focused more on his...
hit and miss with his DC stuff, I find.
On his...
Wildly went up and down with his work where I've been totally disinterested and then completely interested again.
His DC stuff was good until I think it was the New 52 that kind of fucked it all up. Because that's when I started not liking him as much, you know. I liked his Animal Man somewhat, but then he kind of dropped off for me, you know.
Yeah, I just became disinterested in Animal Man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend I'm as plugged into DC. I try every couple years, but my glory days of DC, I think, were the 80s when I really read the most of it. And
you can cover that on DC Noise.
Yeah. And
I'm gonna say that next time you talk about Valiant. You can cover that on Valiant jerk.
I think when they won, I think the Eisner or whatever with Dustin Wynn, the Descender, or maybe it was the one of those ones. I got one of the trades right after Dustin Wynn won. but I don't think I even read it. But I mean, you know, it won the Eisner.
Wow.
Well, I was like, hey, it's cool. And then I went and got him to sign it and everything. Cool. I don't know. It wasn't...
It was cool.
It wasn't the kind of interaction. It was a weird interaction. But then again,
that type of... Okay.
Do you want me to get a doll so you could show me?
Nah. Yeah. Was it a doll show you where my self-esteem was, Phil?
No, where you were touched.
But other than that, like, I think I've read maybe some of his Valiant. I've tried that. I tried the Valiant reboot at times, read different stuff in it.
Did he do a reboot in Valiant?
I mean, just note for readers and everyone, that was actually a reboot, not a relaunch.
Yeah, but the whole Valiant was a reboot, wasn't it?
Oh, exactly.
I mean, that's the kind of the thing. They weren't... I mean, I guess that part of the problem was not being into Valiant the first wave around and not really interested in buying everything the second way around. I think probably hurt me. I probably should have just bought everything. Because picking and choosing didn't really land me.
Buying everything is what hurt me. So you had probably good you didn't.
Yeah, but you had those guys that either you don't grew with, or then they're like fine concept ideas. It's just there's not as... Like, you need to have more story. You need to flesh things out a little bit more.
Because I read everything. I was having fun at first, but I find I got exhausted pretty quick. So.
Yeah, I hate to shout out to sometime member Super Steve, but yeah, the buy-in on a giant, on what ended up becoming a large new universe of interconnected superheroes, I guess was a bit more. But I definitely think if I had read the original Valiant, I would have helped too.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And some of that old Valiant is good.
Yeah, I mean...
And I find it funny when everyone refers to a large buy-in when we have two mega superhero corporations.
Yeah, but I already bought into those.
Is definitely not a large buy-in.
I'm already locked and loaded with that. And I keep trying to buy back into DC and keep having problems.
Now's not a good time.
No, they're getting better now. I'm more interested in this stuff. It's just the fad.
That must be why I'm not liking it.
Are killing me now. Trying to read Nightwing, and it's like, oh no, that book just went up to $15 this week. And I'm like, what? Already? Stop the fad. You're not going to make money. I mean, I guess speculators are selling to other speculators, I guess.
But I also just don't know with... I also wonder if having something like that, is it better to have like a bunch? Do you think it would have been better for Valiant to have more of like a overall tying everything together more? Or do you think?
Look at how Invincible did it. They did the whole, you feel like you have this huge universe when you're reading it, but it's all in one title pretty much. That's how Valiant should have been. It should have been more. Like just maybe four titles and it covers kind of everyone, you know?
No, I don't think so. You could barely do anything. I mean, Harbinger is a story in itself. You can't fit it. You wouldn't be able to do anything else in there.
Well, that could be one of the titles.
The Invincible does the shortcut of you've seen G.I. Joe, you've read Marvel. Look, here's our snake villain. You know what he represents. Wow. You know what
he does. You're so sassy today.
Now we don't have to do an origin because we're playing on the knowledge of other superhero universes. That's what Invincible does over and over again.
Wow, the guy from Black Hammer slagging Invincible for that.
So you're saying instead of you got Black Hammered, you got Invincible. Or you got Alan Moore'd.
That can't be good.
I mean, you can do that, but it became so obvious with Invincible that eventually, like, you had those one-page origin stories by different artists later on to actually do the origins, because you weren't going to find it out in the context of the story.
But what's wrong with that? Savage Dragon used to do that kind of, or Eric Larson used to do that with Savage Dragon, and I like that kind of stuff. You get some guest people in, you know, to get their take on it a bit.
I think his stuff was in Savage Dragon was maybe more wild, that you wouldn't see certain crazy.
And guess what? Those one page origin stories.
Character.
Those one page origin stories are in one of your favorite comics, buddy. Mind Management.
One page origin stories.
Yeah, didn't they always have at the end like these like one page little stories that kind of explain some of the weirdos in it?
No, it would be like. Like a historical moment. They'd be like,
"Here you go. Here's oh, a
remember
spin.
When Franz Ferdinand was shot in, and then they would go into like some weird mind management, like background thing. Or, hey, did you ever wonder how these mind management hotels work? And then they would do a one-off little story on the back page.
Don't talk to me about mind management hotels and then tell me my comics are stupid.
You brought mind management up. I always remember when there's like this rundown hotel, and this is like the Dream Inn, and I always think that's a mind management place. Because I'm like, it looks like a decrepit shack. I'm like, I bet agents go there, and they're like, oh yeah, this is, it's really nice inside, but you don't know.
Well, I hope that they have a lot of success with Sweet Tooth. I'll probably check it out. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
I don't know.
That's what we were talking about, Sweet Tooth.
Well, I feel like it's going to, unless the ending is different, I feel like I'm going to have the same journey where I'm like, this is like the comic. This is a bit weird, but this is all right. Then, oh, I can't believe Lemire did that. I can't, oh my God. That. And then there'll be some, you'll be manipulating your emotions a bit, and they'll be like, oh, this is all right. And then, oh, I'm getting bored.
Well, I feel like this is the type of show that will connect with the normies. I think they're going to like this one.
Well, he had that 6-issue miniseries that where he rebooted his own series. So I'm wondering if that rebooted comic is what this TV series will be.
Oh, maybe.
And
I didn't
then know. It's not the same Sweet Tooth anymore.
Could be. I forgot about that series. Yeah.
And they seem fine to let things roam. I mean, I enjoyed... Now, admittedly, I'm not an expert, but I thought the Umbrella Academy show was different from the comic significantly, but had a lot of the same feeling. I mean, look, you're never going to translate. That's what I like about
the show always
these,
goes its own way eventually.
The modern translations is I feel like they're, they take inspiration from.
Yeah, they do their own thing.
Slightly off point, but I'll allow it in this one instance, the Doom Patrol TV show. I've been reading the Grant Morrison omnibus, and I feel like they're good compliments. Like, it's the same. It's not like they just lift the plot lines and plop them. Like, they tell different stories, but it's all the same characters and the same feel. And I feel like that's a good adaption. You don't just take a story and film it. Like, you take, okay, what are some of the characters or concepts or feelings? And make it your own for the new medium. And I'm hoping that's what Sweet Tooth did. They didn't just like flop open the comic book and
different. It looks a bit different to me, for sure.
Yeah, it depends, because if you go too far, then you get all those terrible adaptions where they just wanted the name that no one knew about, and it's like this, like it's hard if you go too far off point.
I don't think they do that as much, because normally the...
Daybreak.
Yeah, well, Daybreakers. That's a good example. But I was going to say, oftentimes the creators are still... Nowadays, they seem to want to keep them involved. Like, in the old days, they would just buy it and then...
Yeah.
Then, like, ditch it. But now it seems like with all these things, you always see, like...
They do better now.
Hey, he's down on the set. Now, maybe they still fail, but at least the creators are...
They involve them,
are buying in, I feel like, more than the old days when, you know, they'd show up and be like, I didn't even know they made this into a TV show. Like,
yeah.
I sold the rights years ago. And
some of those old comic guys, that's what they do now. They produce the TV shows and stuff like that, right?
I think Larson could have been more involved in the Savage Dragon cartoon. He just didn't care about it. He's just like, I do the comics.
Well, that cartoon's going to make a comeback, you watch.
Well, that was also the after-school formulaic... kind of that's a different I think the budget for probably all 10 seasons is what they spend on one season now.
So can Savage Dragon appear in Invincible?
Oh yeah, he does all the time.
Like in the cartoon?
Eric Larson, I'm sure, would let him, because he's always been like that, and why not, right?
Like, do you think, like, say, I don't know.
That would be amazing.
This is,
I thought
this
about
is a
that
huge
too.
Success. Yeah. Do you think Kirkman would, like, convince Larson? They'll be like, hey, I want to, hey, we can do Savage Dragon. You think that would happen?
Well, it's an Image comic. It's an Image TV show, so why not use any Image characters, right?
I just don't know that there's a big...
Oh, no, no one knows who Savage Dragon is anymore, except for, you know, the hardcore people who used to read it back in the day, like me
and
Steve.
I mean, it's
from
the 90s. There's got to be at least some recognition. I mean, not Spawn level, but there's got to be some recognition.
Yeah, people don't know. I feel like they'd probably just want to start with something new and different that doesn't have that old cartoon.
I don't know.
Because the second people start Googling and they watch that old cartoon, they're not going to, like, you're not going to catch a modern audience, I think. I mean, look, I only watched like half an episode or something, but I don't think if someone watches that old cartoon, they're going to think, you know, that's not for new audiences.
Well, then the Wildcats is done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like pull up those old Avengers cartoons from the 90s.
Oh, Avengers is done. You can't make a movie.
And do you think that anyone's going to want to watch a cartoon based like that? Like, those cartoons are not good. Like, they were of a time and a budget and a production resources.
Well, that Avengers cartoon is particularly bad because it's, like, right at the tail end.
And even if you like
their armor on.
Yeah. I mean, and even if you like the aesthetics or don't, I just think from, the budgets were what they were and... And people worked really hard on them, but at some point...
You know what holds up for me, though? Those Fantastic Four ones.
The one where the Thing painted the four on his chest?
From the 90s. The Marvel Action Hour, and they had the Silver Surfer, and I used to love the Silver Surfer episodes.
The Silver Surfer is strangely interesting. I have what that is on the Disney Plus, if you're in the States.
Oh, yeah. I did like that, and I used to. I was actually looking at the old holographic card set the other day because of Silver Surfer too.
So it's just a weird. It's a weird attempt to do something unusual, but within the strictures of an after-school cartoon of that era. So it's after like
school.
Weird elements, or what was that? A Saturday morning? It feels like it was
Saturday
stripped
morning.
For syndication.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure it was Saturday morning.
Probably,
yeah.
It didn't last in Canada, I don't think, though.
No, I think they had it outlined for, like, twice the amount of episodes, but it got canned. It ended on a cliffhanger where, like, the universe was ending. Spoilers for, 30-year-old cartoon?
Well, I think I'm going to wrap this back around and talk some comics, boys.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Andrew, I had one more thing to mention.
Go for it, Kevin.
Did you know Madefire was still around?
No. I did not. Because
apparently they're suspending operations and shutting down. And I was like, I didn't know that app was still around for comics.
Yeah. No, I don't. If you're not formatted to be on a regular browser or something, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's Tapit, isn't that another one, or something with a similar name? Like, all those ones that have particularly unique portals are not something that I'm going to come across.
Yeah, it was funny that they mentioned at the beat, like, that the popular websites now are, like, website things, not like, apps. So I'm like, oh, no. This is so weird. It is what it is.
Well, I thought I would bring up Oni Press. We like Oni Press books, right?
Yeah, I read. I like Rick and Morty a lot from them.
I think I proved I don't like them anymore.
Well, this is an older book.
Oh, okay.
So if I say Oni Press and Ed Brisson, what do you guys think?
That does something that comes to mind, but...
Did he do an Oni Press book? Post-apocalyptic thing.
Well, it's a bit of a trick question because he was the letterer on this book.
Oh.
What a jerk. Now I'm going to get us that warning at the start, you asshole.
I'm talking about, I have the hardcover, The Secret History of D.B. Cooper, which is Brian Cirilla's book. From 2013. All Brian Cirilla except for lettered by Ed Brisson. I had forgotten that he was...
Yeah, he did a lot of lettering.
That he was, and, you know, there's editors and all that. But otherwise, all Brian Cirilla. My wife likes D.B. Cooper. Interesting, like the only skyjacking in U.S. history not to be
solved. It is interesting.
That's so weird.
71, guy in a business suit, jumps on a small commuter plane, hands a note to the stewardess saying he has a bomb. They reroute the plane. They land. Parachutes and money brought aboard. Most of the passengers discharge except for the flight crew. Flight takes off, and he jumps in a parachute in a rainstorm into the woods, never to be found. And so Brian Cirilla had an interesting take on it. His concept is a very highbrow sci-fi one, where what if D.B. Cooper... It was all staged, like it was all fake, and he has a whole other thing going on, a whole CIA agent, psychic powers, interdimensional battling, all kinds of craziness.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So this is before everything was fake?
Yes.
This sounds to me like it would have a feel like that, what's that robot one we like, Kevin?
What?
He's like a Hellboy robot type character. There's a robot.
Atomic Robo.
Yeah, this sounds like it might be have like a feel like that, maybe.
A little bit more surreal with the Cooper enters into a psychic dimension, and his body splits, so he's in the real world and in this dimensional world, where he can act as an assassin and track down enemies of the United States. But the world is very like they're monsters and everything. So when he kills the monster in the real world, the person dies, the Soviet agent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But a few... okay. Part of the things I hate about being like a nerd or geek or whatever is sometimes details really stick with you than you wish they wouldn't. And so it starts out regular, like describing like the hijacking and everything. But the one thing I hate was that his demands were two parachutes and $200,000. He actually requested four parachutes. And really? It's just one of those little things, because it starts the book describing the thing, and you're like, oh, I wish I didn't know that fact. Like, why does that bother? Like, it's such a unimportant fact. But I do feel like, and it doesn't change the story or anything, but it's one of those things that, if you know that fact, you're like, well, why didn't they just write that? Because why that's important is with the investigators, if he only has two, then clearly some people are going to be able to stay on the plane. By ordering four, he could have had himself and the entire flight crew parachute. Now, it turns out in the real world, he just parachuted. But that way, you know, you don't want them giving you a defective parachute or anything. So, but anyways, that's a super minor point. The other thing that bothers me a little less was there's a very famous pencil sketch of D.B. Cooper. He wore sunglasses and a business suit. And Cirilla's design went for a much stockier, bigger build kind of guy that doesn't look at all like the sketch. But that's kind of all right because it turns out that the actual hijacking in this story never really happened. It was a big psychic explosion and everything. So having him not look at all like the sketch fits the narrative. But just to start that way kind of was weird. But I like the designs are very exaggerated. So like perspective is way off. So he's fighting these monsters, like the foreshortening and everything is way super exact, you know, like their arms are like a million miles long and their legs are a little short and everything. But because he's in the psychic dimension as an assassin, it seems to fit. And I like those exaggerated styles work for me anyways, but it takes a little while for me to grok to that's what happens is his CIA handlers have put him in moving hotel rooms, give him this drug, and then he enters this dimension and goes to assassinate. But the reason he's addicted to it is he wants to go in because he's looking for his daughter who was kidnapped. And he believes it's the daughter was kidnapped by the CIA to keep him in this program because most people can't survive the process. So it's that kind of paranoid conspiracy level government thing. If you like those stories, or if you hate them, definitely avoid this. Like, that's what this is all about. And no, Kevin, I did not go to any of the websites that Chirilla set up where he had an audio tracks to go with reading it. But if you want to, maybe I'll put one in the show notes. I don't know. That stuff always...
Well, there's always... music. I mean, I'm not going to tell you to put it into the episode or anything.
So I'm always nervous with old websites for a long time. Listeners of Sister Show Marvel Noise will know you don't just put weird URLs from old comic books into your computer. It can cause problems. But I don't want to give too much away of the mystery. It's an oversized hardcover, so it's fun. The kind of a muted color palette. That's the only thing for this dimension. I would have preferred much more garish over-the-top colors, but that's an aesthetic choice. The monsters are all fun. And so it's a race, kind of, between D.B. Cooper trying to find his daughter and get through this, and the Soviet agents are trying sending their own agent to kill him, and the CIA is getting worried that he's kind of going crazier and crazier. You know, so they want to suspend him because it turns out that he doesn't need the drug anymore. And he can just go into this realm. And we've seen that before. The Daphne du Maurier wrote a really good short story about that. She's most famous for writing The Birds, the Hitchcock movie. She wrote the novel behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Rebecca, which was another Hitchcock one. And that one's a great one. They take another drug that sends them back in time. And it's the same kind of thing. The more they take it, the more they kind of lose grasp of reality. A writer that came after that would be Philip K. Dick. Those kind of elements of, like, what's reality? What's this other world? And how are they interconnected? So that part was fun. Like I said, I wish I didn't have that thing in my brain that's like, why is it two parachutes and not four parachutes?
Isn't that kind of a trust thing, too? Like, if there's something that breaks you out of the story or the reality at the beginning, then you start questioning other things in the story that maybe you wouldn't have if that's...
Yes. Mm-hmm. But definitely. Because this is such a fantastical, crazy story about assassins and weird demand, like, it isn't. So that's why the sketch thing didn't bother me as much. Well, like, well, you know, it was a whole CIA cover operation, so they would release a fake sketch or whatever. But in the beginning, it did throw me a lot. I'm like, this guy looks enough. You'd think you would base it on that sketch and be like, oh. But, yeah. So most normal humans aren't going to have this problem. It's just one of those things that sometimes I think some of our geek brains, you know, you seize on details, and then when they don't line up, you're like, error.
Oh, yeah. Then it bugs you the whole time, yeah.
And it's not important to the story at all. I can't stress how unimportant this thing is to the rest of the story. But Oni Press, 2013. I would guess. I gotta think this is around or anything.
Maybe it's went out of print.
Sure, it's out of print.
Maybe,
but it was five.
I don't think they're doing much these days.
Five issues all collected here. I love the oversized format too. That always sells me on these things. I like a big, because I end up reading half the collection seem to go digest, so I love when they go oversized.
Oh, yeah, especially with Oni. They were known for a lot of digest.
Yeah, so it was a real treat to have this, and I bought this thing, probably back in 2013 or whatever, but when I saw that documentary, I was like, oh, yeah, I got that. I should read that. I don't know that if I have read it, I forgot all about it, so let's get back into it and read it. And Ed Brisson, letterer.
Yeah. I would have never, like, noticed. Because that's probably before. Like, I don't know how.
Well, I also don't know when he had his first
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to remember, too.
But he certainly was, gone on to then end up being who he is.
you know,
famous comic book writer and all that stuff, and works for Marvel and Image and all them. But 2013, I don't think he had broken into the scene as the man yet.
That's what I'm trying to think. If he was at any conventions, he might have been doing conventions around here somewhere.
Is he Canadian? I don't know. I've met him at shows. Like, I've liked his work. I think, was it Murder World? Is that the one?
Murder Book?
Murder Book. That's his big indie thing, right? I mean, I know it's Marvel and DC and all that stuff, too, but...
And then there was that post-apocalyptic series where it was just Sheltered.
Yeah. Oh, I think
I love Sheltered
on this show.
Yeah. That one.
Yeah. So, just funny when you get to see these guys in there. Lettering's important, and he does a great job at it, but it's just weird to think, hey, it's an Ed Brisson book for Oney.
It's funny. Phil triggered my memory about something with the Atomic Robo thing. Because I read the webcomic that, I guess, got to the Atomic Robo. Like, you know, everyone has their, like, origin stories. And I remember before Atomic Robo, the creator had one of those... There was a lot. I don't know how familiar you were, Andrew, but there was a lot of pixel art webcomics. Like, if you had your PVPs and whatever, like, people were drawing, and then you had sort of, like, I wouldn't say that the people couldn't draw, but they knew how to cut other pictures together, so it was, like, pixel art from video games were, like, put into webcomics, and there was a lot of them. So anyways, you had, like, 8-Bit Theater, which was, like, a sort of retelling of the Final Fantasy 1 game, but way more humorous and way longer and weirder. But anyhow, you probably can't reprint that, right, as a comic in a collected edition or anything. Because you're literally using... I mean, maybe you could get away with parody or something. This is a parody of the Final Fantasy. Please don't sue us, Square Enix.
Well, and also how... I mean, maybe that website was everywhere, but some of those things you wonder, not just the threat of suit, but just are enough people going to buy the print copies that it's worth doing it?
So, and apparently it wasn't, like, even the stuff, like, I've done online, like, I never thought of, like, oh, you gotta make this at a certain size, at a certain DPI or whatever for future generations. So apparently that's at a not appropriate size for printing too. But I thought it was really weird that since you can't print, you can't sell that with the in the best format as a comic, he's selling it in a Kickstarter as a script. And then I was like, I don't know, like, that's a totally unique sort of comic-ish Kickstarter. Like, I don't know if I would want to read the script. Like, it would still be funny, but I think part of the appeal of that too was, like, all the crazy pixel art and everything that was being done, because some of that was highly customized.
I've bought a script or two off of writers sometimes, and they're kind of interesting as novelties, but I never really curl, like, except as, like, a artifact of comparing it to the final. It was more just, oh, it's a way to buy something and talk to them and get a, like, more than, like, boy, this script is really gonna be interesting. But that is fat. Like, I remember when they left Red 5.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh my gosh, aren't they, like, 90% of Red 5 comics?
Well, pretty much, right? Like, that was the breakout.
Yeah, because then I would see Red 5 at shows after. This is maybe 5-6 years ago. And then you'd be like, wow, that's... Because they had the Moon Girl book that was really nice at Red 5. That was, like, the... with the painted artwork and everything. And a few other books. But, yeah, when...
Yeah, I remember the dinosaur book they had, too.
When Atomic Robo left. And then Atomic Robo, you're right. I think they moved to using... Kickstarter. I know they did IDW too, but
yeah,
because I backed a few, like one or two of the Kickstarters, but I think I've laid off that.
It definitely has a following.
Like yeah. Oh, it's good stuff. I liked it. It just that regular Kickstarter model is hard for me to keep track of, and aside from the Steve Ditko, Robin Snyder stuff, there weren't too many that I would be regularly buying your Kickstarter of it.
You mean for the next 10 years, they don't keep emailing you about their latest project, even if you don't want to hear about it?
They do, but the problem is, because I've backed so many Kickstarters, I get a flood of Kickstarter, like they just get
junk almost instant filter right to the junk.
Because, you know, once you've backed several hundred Kickstarters, the volume of that, because then they'll cross-platform. So if you back something, so a guy has three Kickstarters, if you back three of them, you will get three emails for the same promotion for the new thing. And I'm like, they really need to fix that so that each person only gets one spam email.
That'd be annoying for sure.
You know what the funny thing of this too is, if someone would like redraw that pixel comic, I mean, I would buy that probably as like a monthly. Although it would not capture the same feeling of the original, because, I mean, how can you, like, the 8-bit artwork is not gonna. Like, there's no way you can take that into another medium.
No, plus, you probably, the nostalgia means you actually would rather watch it on the computer, you know, wouldn't you? Like, or your phone or whatever, more than...
I don't know. This is weird. I should really... I was thinking, and once I saw that, instead of, like, contributing to the Kickstarter, I was just like, I should reread that online again and not contribute any money. Like, that's kind of sad in a way.
Well, like you say, part
of something I should reread.
Yeah, part of it is for that free. Fun of looking at the. Hey, if they didn't like it, they'd take it down, right?
It's true. And then, like, I get the Atomic Robo stuff, the hardcovers or whatever from TCAF, or so that's good.
Yeah, I got a sketch cover from the artist on Atomic Robo years and years ago. I think I got him do a little Iron Man, like, Atomic Robo mashup sort of thing.
You know, I thought about getting a sketch years ago in one of those tiny cons, and I never did. I got something else instead, and now I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I probably should have went for that at the time.
I went through a big sketch cover phase for a couple of years where it was fun getting them, because they're kind of easier to display. I have a little comic rack and I can put them on and everything. But I know a lot of artists, I guess the quality of the paper varies from here, because sometimes you'll hear complaints about how, I guess, some are not as easy to draw on as others. So I always feel bad about that. All right, boy, should we do some more? Where are we at? How are we feeling?
I don't want to monopolize all the time here. Like, I just...
Well, give it to us.
Spun out some crazy ideas, but I read the first issue of Hench Girl.
Okay.
Which one?
Hench Girl? I think it was originally from Scout Comics.
Okay, I haven't heard of that one.
And then it was collected by Dark Horse. By Kristen Goodsnook, I guess? I probably mangled that. Anyhow. When I see these... I think a henchman story is always a good story. Like, when you see... It's sort of like you have your TV series or your comics or whatever, like with the main crew, and then they'll have an episode and they'll be like, oh, this is what the regular people, or this is what the henchmen are doing or whatever, you know, when you get into their, like, sometimes miserable private lives. It's funny, like, this kind of reminded me in a way of remember the Adventures of Superhero Girl?
Yes. Colleen Coover. I don't remember who else, but I know she was the artist on it.
It's sort of drawn in I think that's closer to the style of the story so far, because I only read the first one, of the story and the artwork. So yeah, it's kind of funny because they go into all their complications, like where you have like the big time superhero and then them getting beat up or shot or whatever, and they get home and then someone's like, you really need health insurance. Stuff like that. They're like, oh well, we stole all this loot, but then I had to give it to the boss. And then they have things like, oh well, they're trying to get a job, but they don't really have... This is the weird... This is one of those things, Andrew, where you said, you know, things take you out of it. And this is a pretty modern story. Like, this isn't, like, 10 or 20 years ago. But they like, have a resume they bring to this business because they're trying to get a regular job. And I'm like... Who brings a resume anywhere anymore?
Yeah.
I'm like, that went out like it feels like a long time ago. Because obviously they don't have a proper resume. Because they're just out doing the henchman thing. Hench girl?
Oh, I was completely wrong. I want to correct myself earlier. It was Faith Erin Hicks.
Oh, okay.
Not Colleen Coover. Bad Andy.
I mean, you can just edit that out, Andrew.
No, I can't. I'm not going to be dishonest to the listeners. I made a mistake. An unforgivable mistake. And now I'm correcting it. Apologies to all creators involved.
Apology not accepted.
Wow. Well, the other thing is, when she doesn't get the job, they call her back and say she didn't get the job. I'm like, what company ever did that for you?
Heck, they don't even half the time call to let you know they got your resume or anything.
I know. Yeah.
You're lucky if you get a form email that says you're registered. Oh, does she also get beat up by supervillains or superheroes, I guess?
Yeah, like there's some of that going on where there's like a competition too between the other henchmen, henchwomen, henchgirls. So there's like all those sort of complications, and they're like, oh, we're going to do horrible things to this orphanage. And then she's like, it seems like she's into the henching thing, but like an orphanage, like, I guess a bit of a conscience. So she's like, oh, well, maybe if I come up with something better, we won't do that plan. But then her competitor that suggested that the orphanage thing is like, oh, I can't believe we're going to go with her plan to steal from this other guy instead. But then it seems like the big boss is like, we're going to do both plans, which leads to both of the women suggesting that their alternate plans are like, both of them are not happy. Because she's not happy about the orphanage, and then her competitor is not happy about having to do the other plan too. So, I mean, there's a lot of complications. And a lot of... I think it's pretty fun. I mean, maybe getting a little dark at times, but still a fun time.
Yeah, I don't know this title, but I do remember Scout Comics. I've seen some of their stuff.
Yeah, I've noticed that a bit lately too.
I think they have a ton of it. But you said this was collected by Dark Horse?
Yeah, I think it was collected twice, because the one I have is Hench Girl Expanded. So I guess the first print has less in it. So that's kind of an interesting idea. Because they have all these like strips in the back, so I'm thinking web comics. Not that I can confirm that. Horrible, Kevin. You should have looked that up beforehand, right, Andrew?
Hey, I'm no one to talk. I make more mistakes per hour than anyone else, or per minute. I don't know what time frame we're going to use.
So it looks like similar to that other one, definitely, and then same type of coloring and everything. So if you like that one, The Adventures of Superhero Girl, I would say try this out. Yeah, this one might be a little more risque, but I mean, they also make comments that she's the only one that has to wear a girdle.
Eh. Oh, so the rest are hench guys?
No, well, there's another hench girl, but I assume she's supposed to be the prettier one.
Oh, okay. Oh, so this is like to keep, to compare. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I do think, I just think it's fascinating when these things go to like multiple publishers.
Yeah, me too.
Especially when it's not, I mean, maybe this thing is like huge and everyone knows it and I'm ignorant for not, but I just think it's like fascinating that like, yeah, I mean, I guess if you have the rights to it, I mean, I'm sure it's, I would guess it's creator owned. I don't know. Maybe you had to sell it to Dark Horse.
Yeah, I assume there would be a trade-off since it went to Dark Horse, but Dark Horse seems to have those Hollywood connections too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If there's a Hench Girl movie, like,
yeah,
does the creator get shut out of it all? Or?
I assume they get something, but maybe if you're like at some indie thing, you were getting no representation anyways. So, I mean, yeah. I guess you take your chances.
Yeah, well, now maybe you'll get Hench Girl and Hellboy teaming up.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, that would be fine.
Or I know you... Oh, wait. Kevin, did this get folded into Black Hammer somehow? Is that what this is all about?
No, this wasn't a long con, Andrew.
You're trying this to trick Black me Hammer. Into You're saying reading a Black Hammer book.
You have PTSD, or you think every title is Black Hammer. I know.
Did you Black Hammer me, Kevin?
Stop Black Hammering him, Kevin.
Get me all worked up and excited for a comic, and then I find out it's some Black Hammer tie-in.
Oh, boy.
One of these days I'll pull a Phil and buy all the Black Hammers, and then I'll be on board.
If you like them, and you might not know ahead of time, like, I bought one of those Hellboy Library Editions, and mm-hmm. I didn't really know if I was really into Hellboy, because I don't know if you know the history, but I like bought the first two trades, and the first one's like scripted by John Byrne, weird, and I'm like, I don't know about this Hellboy stuff, it's all right, but it's like the Conqueror Worm is when I think Hellboy is my favorite, like, good, awesome, best Hellboy stuff. So it's like, that's the one I bought as a library edition, but that was before I really was into Hellboy. So if you know but don't know, you're gonna be into Hellboy ahead of time, you might as well just buy the crazy library editions too.
Yeah, go all, do like I said, go like Phil, just buy big, sight unseen. Mm-hmm.
It's failed me many times.
All right, well, I think we've got a nice little relaxed episode, unless anyone has any final things to say. I think we'll wrap it up here.
Bye. Drock, Mega City 3 needs that vaccine.
Oh, look at Kevin working his catchphrase in already. Phil, any final thoughts for the listeners at home?
Save me from Canada before we crumble.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe. Take care.
I regret not getting into it like you guys were, though. Like, I wish I would have, like, hearing you guys talk about it, I always wanted to get into it. I wish I would have, because no, I missed out on all the ones I want, though.
Yeah, but, dude, it's a lot of... You think comics take up room? These little plastic fuckers take... And if you keep all their little... Especially the high-end stuff, all the different head swaps and hands and all that stuff.
For me, though, like, my collection would never get higher than probably, like, 20 or 30, not like you guys, you know.